This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by Lord Jason of House Ross, Lady Amanda of House Richardson, Lord Adam the Young Bull of House Parker, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, the Ghost of Harrenhal, A Bannerman Has No Name, Lord Thanos of House Titan, Lord Nelson of the Long Isle, the Mother of Cats, Sir Joshua of House Ross, Lady Kendall of House Taylor, Lord Hunter the Foulmouthed, Captain of the Guard, and Sir Dustin the Rooster Knight, Captain of the Guard.
Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Welcome to Season 8, Episode 3, Predictions and Follow-Up Friday.
Yeah, Sir Ezra, how are we doing today?
Well, we're doing good. I mean, we're doing good.
Let's call this take two for the people
take
who...
Two.
We were just about 30 minutes in on the last episode, and Sir Ezra realized he wasn't recording. So, apparently wasn't very watchful this evening.
Sir Ezra, the unwatchful, is back. Oh, great! That'll be fun. Memes.
That's the first time that's ever happened. So,
yeah, it's radical, dude. I'll tell you what it is, man. It's the hype of the show. It's all the new listeners. It's, you know. We were collecting ravens from, mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, everywhere, all over the place, over the world. They're all flying in. It's like we're at the Citadel, and literally ravens are just flying everywhere at us. Yeah. So it is awesome. We really, really appreciate everyone's support that we have been getting. Sir Ezra, I mean, there's Ice and Fire Con this weekend. Are you excited?
I am excited. Yeah, we're gonna go down there and see. A lot of different Game of Thrones fans. We've got some Song of Ice and Fire, you know, other podcasts down there. We've got, Radio Westeros, History of Westeros, probably many others. Maybe we'll see Order of the Green Hand. We might have a collaboration coming up with them, by the way.
We do, too. Yeah. We've been in talks with them, possibly doing a collaboration episode here shortly, so stay tuned for that. Mm-hmm. You and I did a big Patreon episode. We recorded it and posted it last night, so when you're listening to this on Friday, it would have been on Wednesday, about Jenny of Oldstones, her song that they played in the last episode, its kind of significance, and I kind of went on my own rabbit hole about how it could possibly have some ties with Melisandre, so be sure to check that out on patreon.com/bendtheknee.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I thought, you know, that people would often make the connection between, you know, Jenny and, or I'm sorry, you know, Melisandre and the Ghost of Highheart
they're possibly the same person, or not the Ghost of Highheart, but the Woods Witch that Jenny brings. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you take a different, you know, I like your take on it. So I hope folks will go, you know, check that out. 'Cause it's pretty interesting. We have some more thoughts on, Jenny of Oldstones later coming up in the show too. So,
Yeah. So, So some big things this weekend. Obviously, we have the what may be the final battle, or at least the start of the final battle. The Battle of Winterfell is coming. You and I both were saying that we think it's time. All the Starks are dying this weekend. Bran, Sansa, Arya, Tony. They're all dead. They're all dead. It's a weekend of dead Starks. Whether you're at the movie theater or watching HBO, so.
Yeah, it is not a good weekend to be a Stark. Yeah, that's for sure. Oh, that's funny. That is funny. Who knows? I'm actually excited. I'm going to go watch it tomorrow. But it's some good stuff happening this weekend. You know, I get the convention, Endgame, and then Episode 3. Episode 3 is just going to be, it's going to knock our socks off. I feel like there's just going to be, it's going to be so emotional. You know, I keep saying, you know, grab a buddy, have a support friend there, because you're going to need it.
Yeah, I was considering buying stock in Kleenex just for the sheer amount of tissues that are going to be burned through this weekend. So I've got mine, and I'm rip-roared and ready to go. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about trivia. So last week we did a trivia question The question was on the Facebook group, so we're going to do another one this week. All you have to do is go onto the our Facebook group, join. There'll be a trivia question posted at the top of the page. We'll pin it to the top. All you have to do is answer the question correctly to be entered. Leave a comment and we'll pick a winner. Last week, the question was, what color are Tormund Giant's Bane's eyes? The answer is blue. So the winner that we chose randomly, we just put everyone to a big name generator, was Lady Rose Marie Paredes. I hope that is correct. So give us a message in our, go to the Facebook page. You can send us a message. It'll pop up in our inbox and we can coordinate with you, sending you your gift. So the next trivia question, which we'll post tomorrow, you have a week to engage. We're going to keep kind of the theme going with something from the last episode. Sir Ezra, we're learning a lot about Tormund Giantsbane this season. We learned that his eyes have always been blue, and last week we learned how he got so strong. So exactly how many months did Tormund Giantsbane suckle at a giant's teat? That is the trivia question. So all you have to do is go on to our Facebook group, leave a comment, and you'll be entered, and we'll do a Funko Pop giveaway.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, guys, I hope we can continue with this theme till the end of the season, but I'm not so sure how much longer we're going to be able to do, you know.
Yeah, I'm thinking next week might be it. Yeah. So we'll see, unfortunately.
I mean, he represents the wildlings, so I just kind of keep hoping, you know, it's like that he makes it to the end, you know,
right.
But I don't know. We'll see. And also, if you get a chance to go look up any of the Robin Aaron, you know, correlations to Tormund memes out there, they're hysterical.
There's a lot. I don't often encourage people to go check out what I consider the dark side of the Game of Thrones Reddit. You say you have the Game of Thrones Reddit, you have the A Song of Ice and Fire Reddit, then you have a lot of other subcategories, but what I consider the third largest is Free Folk Reddit, which is anything goes, and a lot of you know, memes there. So
they're hilarious.
Yeah, they're pretty funny.
Yeah. Okay, well, so let's move into our bold predictions. We're gonna make some. We've got we have a Raven as well. That I think it's Lady Brittany has made a couple bold predictions. So, you know, we had so many Ravens. We're hoping, you know, after episode 3, you guys will send us a couple more bold predictions for the following episode, and we'll read some of those. But so let's start with her. Let's see. She says, "Hey guys, a couple of thoughts I had on the episode this week. These may have been said before, but I just wanted to be involved in the conversation. Point number one, Gendry dies first."
Ugh. Yeah, I can see it.
Wow. What if he's the one Arya is running from because she doesn't want to hurt/kill him? That's interesting. You know, that would, you know, she's in love with him. We've heard things like, you know, Ned Stark, you know, being raised or something like that. Or we've heard, you know, who would it be that would really scare her, you know? But if Gendry dies and is killed by, you know, one of the White Walkers or one of the others, then yeah, that would be really scary.
I've seen that theory. I think it's a really interesting one. Gendry is a character I would like to see him live to the end.
Me too.
I don't know. Because he's a character where it's like, why have they kept him around so long in the show unless he's gonna have some significance?
Yeah, He's a bastard born, you know, he's one of Robert's bastards. I mean, I love the whole, you have a son, I have a daughter, you have a daughter, I have a son, whatever, you know, and I just think that's, it's so cool that they did hook up. But I want them both to live, actually. That's my own guilty pleasure, but, you know, so we shall see. Let's continue on, though. Lady Brittany says, from a plot standpoint, I think the following folks are going to be safe. And she has listed here Dany, Jon, Arya, Sansa, Sam, and either Tyrion or Jaime. Probably not both. So probably not both on the Lannister boys.
Yeah, I've read a big theory, or many people have a theory that Jaime is going to die, and we may see a scene in which we think Arya dies, right? Uh-huh. And also a scene in which we think Jaime dies, and then perhaps we see Jaime throughout the rest of the season, but it's actually Arya wearing his face, and then Arya kills Cersei using Jaime's face. And other people have made that argument, but now that we're a little bit further into the episodes, we're running out of time for just open speculation. We all have to get a little more specific.
Right. Yeah, you're going to narrow in on something.
Sure. Yeah, I don't see that happening. No. I don't see Jaime or Tyrion dying in this battle, because I think it's more likely that Tyrion would die in this battle than Jaime, because I just feel you'd really have to give them some significance with Cersei is ultimately where their deaths would come, or their story. That's kind of their arc, right? Their arc has always been, Jaime's arc has always been, has literally been tied to Cersei, because you know they're twins. So yeah. If he were to just die in the battle, I just don't think it would be. I feel like it'd be kind of weak. Like it'd almost be as if they don't know how to finish his story.
Right.
That's why I definitely think Brienne of Tarth is dying this episode.
See, okay. Well, we're going to go back and forth here.
I'm now 100. And now that she was knighted, I think that was the fitting end for her character, and she will die in this battle.
I feel like, and this is great, because you know, Sir Matt and I differ here just slightly, because I feel like she is Jaime Lannister's legacy. Like, she is his, you know, she was knighted by him on the eve of the Battle of Winterfell, and so she kind of will live on and do great things, maybe kind of like Dunk, you know, and maybe becomes this, I don't know, back in the King's Guard, Queen's Guard, whatever it may be. So there's that. That's just, you know, a difference. As for, you know, Tyrion and Jaime, remember the conversation that Tyrion has with Bran in last episode? Yeah, I kind of feel like he learned a lot there. And so actually think maybe both of them might live through this battle and face Cersei in some situation.
Yeah. Yeah. So where I differ with you on Brienne is I think Brienne also talking to Jaime about protecting the Starks is that Brienne's done and Jaime's going to continue carrying. I'm with you. I think both Jaime and Tyrion will survive this battle.
This battle. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And last week I had briefly touched, just because you brought it up, I had briefly touched on the idea of possibly Tyrion becoming the Three-Eyed Raven. And so many people wrote us and they said, I don't know if you edited that part out or if you just didn't really finish it. We just didn't go any further with it. We didn't edit it or out anything. It was just a thought. I didn't really have a full fledged theory. I just thought it would be something that was interesting that I didn't think would ever come true, just because of how little time we have left in the series. We just had so many people write in about it that I had mentioned it.
Yeah,
because Bran was talking to Tyrion, and they had talked about how Tyrion's mind was going to be so important down the line, which is why I think Tyrion is going to live. And it was just a thought. It wasn't a full fledged theory or anything. I don't think that is at all happening. I just thought it was just something I thought in the moment was kind of cool. That's how it had been kind of done in the past. Was maybe the Three-Eyed Raven had kind of chosen people that way, because we don't all, they may not have all been tied to that cave.
Right. For sure. Yeah. And I was thinking like you, it is a cool thought. The only issue when we talk
about
tons, it
later, there's tons of issues with it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just that Bran, I mean, he's had such a short stint, at this position. It's like, I feel like
he's like a transition Pope.
Yeah. I mean, I guess so. Like, so I don't know. I wanted to see him more in this role. And then a lot of people think, you know, he told Tyrion something huge. So, you know, revealed something about
he told Tyrion something that would be able to have Tyrion give Tyrion the information to be able to defeat the Night King later.
So, okay. Lady Brittany goes on to say that she believes that Jorah is definitely dead this next episode. So there's a bold prediction for you. Definitely dead, even though he has Heartsbane. So we'll see. She goes on to say, I think we will see the dead rise in the crypts, but since they are entombed, they won't be able to get out and actually harm anyone. But imagine how insane it'd be to hear the snarling and the thrashing while being quartered off in the crypts. Poor Varys. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that would be a crazy, crazy scene. Yeah, you could see, you know, kind of as he gets closer, you know, they start to kind of shake or whatever. And then, you know, people are freaking out. The kids are crying, you know, and all that good stuff. So maybe Varys has some sick moment where he takes flame to him or something. Be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think Jorah's going to die?
I don't know. I feel like he's going to die saving Dany. And so, like, I don't know that this is the point in time where he would do that. You know,
I feel like I've been going back and forth on it all week.
Yeah.
I still think Jorah's going to die this season. I kind of thought it would be at this battle, but as we, you know, we learn, obviously the predictions we made a few weeks ago, our final season predictions are thrown entirely out the window, because I definitely didn't believe that we'd have two episodes in which the only person who died was that little kid, you know? Yeah, right. I mean,
crazy.
Yeah, I now that Jorah was given that sword, it just seems odd that he'd be given such a powerful weapon that it seems like there's going to be a bigger story to, because they've talked about it a little bit. You know, Sam takes the sword, Sam asks for a pardon from Daenerys, and then gives the sword to Jorah, and we had Jon try to give Longclaw to Jorah, and now Sam's kind of returning the favor. So I'm starting to think Jorah might, he might survive this battle. I'm starting to think a little bit, but it could be, you know, here we go. He might survive.
Yeah, I know.
He's still definitely not getting with Daenerys. There's no way that's ever happening.
No, but I think, you know, Gurm, like he writes characters just, you know, so well. He makes us hate them, then love them, root for them, then, you know, all those different things. So Jorah's one of those characters who's just had such a crazy up and down. He's been sent away. He's come back. He's been redeemed. I think he's a character that, you know, Gurm really likes. So I'd love to see him kind of continue. And maybe he is her, you know, not, he would have been, she keeps implying that he would have been her hand, but, you know, Tyrion was there. And so, and he even vouches for Tyrion. So, which makes me love Jorah even more, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't know. Okay, awesome. So that was Lady Brittany's predictions there. Let's go ahead and make some of our own, you know, bold predictions. Just like a quick bold prediction for next episode.
Okay, I'll go first. Even though it saddens me to say it.
Yeah.
Something I talked a little bit about, but I think I'm going to go ahead and confirm my thought here. I think Missandei is dead.
Yeah.
Going back and rewatching that, we talked a little bit about it, the episode one, where it just seems too movie-like, where Missandei is talking to Grey Worm about the shores of Noth. Is it Noth? Somebody criticized me the other day for calling it Narth, and that is, I was incorrect. Is it Noth?
Narth?
I don't know. They're going to complain again. But,
it's N-A-A-T-H, I think.
Yeah, like Noth. I don't know. That's how I'd pronounce it. So, you know, she talks about the shores there on the in the beaches. That just seems to me something that somebody is gonna reference as she slowly sleeps, you know, slipping away as she's dying. I can see them. I can see because she wants to see it again. Especially something like a beach, right? Like I could see the sands. It's almost like when Gandalf is talking to, you know, to Pippin about what happens when you die, and you can see, and it's like silvery glass and
all
right shores. I see it in that type of scene. And then when you go and you look at the scene where they kiss right before Grey Worm takes off into battle, Grey Worm's like, he kisses her and they have a great embrace, and then he takes off and she's left kind of standing there stunned. I feel like that was more of a final kiss for Grey Worm than it was for Missandei. And that would be,
dude,
death in stories, especially as you get towards the end, it's so hard, but I think that's why it's something that really gives depth and adds amazing character development. I've always been a big believer where more often than not, if you go to watch a movie, like any kind of movie, they're going to kind of focus on one or two things. You can watch a movie where the plot is amazing, but the characters aren't that great. Mm-hmm. And another way around, where the character development is amazing, but the plot kind of sucks and it's kind of forgiving. And then you have things like Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones and Harry Potter. And the reason they succeed so well is because they have great character development and great plot. That's kind of the magic. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
The magic ingredients to have something as epic yeah. and successful as this. And so I think that it would be so heartbreaking, but it would be such a good story.
Yeah. I mean, here's what it is. It's sick and twisted. I can't believe you would even insinuate. But Sandy, I mean, I love her. Like, come on. That sucks, man. I mean, also think of how much power Grey Worm got from that kiss,
mm-hmm.
you know? He just like that's everything he needed right there. Boom.
Right.
He's going to face the dead, you know. So, okay, cool. Awesome. So I want to give a quick shout out to my friend Lindsay Gadotti, who I recently met at Star Wars Celebration. She's a fellow podcaster and does some blogging and different things out there. She came across a theory and she sent it to me. We were kind of picking it apart today. One of my, and I've seen other Ravens about this, the idea that we will need someone to, as I put it, John or Bran have to go Super Saiyan. Like they have to ascend. And the reason they would maybe need to do that is to get through to the Night King. I know they're trying to lure him in to the Godswood. I just don't think he's stupid enough to go for that. Or maybe he's so badass that like it doesn't matter. He's gonna go there anyways and do what he has to do. We've got other Ravens that say he may take off and fly straight towards King's Landing, you know, which is kind of cool. So there's that. But Lindsay brought up a theory where the idea was that Theon would turn Bran into, you know, a White Walker, you know, and basically do the whole ceremony at the, at the Heart Tree.
Right.
So I was like, wow. My problem with that is she and I both kind of agreed that, like, why wait if you're going to do something like that? And it led us to think about the need maybe to increase in some type of power to counter his powers. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So who would do that? Probably Jon or Bran. And how they do it and why? Why have they waited to a certain, you know, time? If Bran knows they need to do that, is it all about timing and setting this up? Or, you know, yeah. So I don't know. I just kind of feel like there's going to be something like that's going to be set up towards the end of this. And we're going to be making predictions about the need for them to do some ritual or ceremony or something like that. It's to bring down the Night King.
Yeah. So possibly. Yeah. Possibly with the help of Melisandre.
Yeah. So, okay. All right, friends. Well, let's see here. Let's dive into some Ravens. We have quite a few, so we'll get into these. As Sir Matt had said, we did an episode on who is Jenny of Old Stones. We talked about that on Patreon, so go check that out. But we wanted to start off with a Raven here from Lady Alicia, I think. Lady Alicia. Mm-hmm. So let's see here. She says, "Hello, good sirs. My name is Lady Alicia. I hail from the Kingdom of Michigan." Oh, yeah. I remember I read this.
Yeah.
Why
are we reading this again? I mean,
being from the Kingdom of Ohio.
We're from the Kingdom of Ohio, so you see these. I mean, it's okay. We've put down the rebellion for about the last 12 years straight. I mean,
right.
So.
How many more times do we have
this year I feel they may win a battle. So
yeah, me too.
So
from the Kingdom of Michigan, the land of constant weather changes. I found your podcast a few months ago and was very excited to find a Game of Thrones podcast that discusses both the show and books in great detail. Additionally, I had just begun reading the books, so your series reread comes at a perfect time. I had hoped to catch up to your current podcast episode before the final season released, but sadly, I'm pretty far behind. Let's see. However, I just reached your follow-up Friday episode where you discuss The Ghost of High Heart, and I jumped right ahead to the Season 8 episode reviews. I had to listen to your thoughts after seeing Episode 2 and freaking out over the inclusion of Jenny of Old Stones.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry if you've already discussed some of this in your show. I skipped like 20 episodes. So she brings up a couple of different points here about the, you know, Jenny's song and Jenny of Old Stones. I'm going to summarize some of it. She doesn't really drive towards a theory of any kind, but just points out something interesting that, you know, for the realm to kind of discuss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's see here. The Prince of Dragonflies loved Jenny of Old Stones so much that he cast aside a crown, and Westeros paid the price in corpses. And so that's referring to, you know, Duncan Targaryen, who would have been the next king, but laid aside his crown so that he could marry Jenny of Old Stones. And Jenny of Old Stones comes to court. She's got the Woods Witch with her. She's a little crazed herself. I think she was possibly a witch. So maybe even bewitched him in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's that, you know. So Lady Brittany goes on to say, or I'm sorry, Lady Alicia goes on to say here that Barristan Selmy tells Daenerys this. As we know, the song is about tragedy and doomed love. It tells the tale of a Targaryen prince, Duncan, who breaks his betrothal to a Baratheon to marry a commoner named Jenny. As you know, Duncan was the heir to the throne, but gave up his crown to be with Jenny. He gave up his crown for love. The show made a point to show us multiple couples as the song played over. Specifically, this could be relating to Jon and Dany, and of course Rhaegar and Lyanna. Jon giving up his crown due to his love for Dany. So yeah, I think that is kind of the main, you know, purpose and what it was showing us is that is another tie back to the Targaryen line, right? And the prince that was promised would come from this line,
right?
Right. You know, so that's a big point there. Let's move on down here. Some interesting things in the story. Catelyn, when she's reflecting on the song, you know, after Rob marries Jane Westerling, he's actually breaking his pact with the Freys, and she notices there's some similarities and hopes that his song will have a lucky twist at the end, which we unfortunately know didn't happen. So because she's thinking about, you know, Jenny's song, and she was thinking about even when she used to play Jenny of Old Stones, and Peter Baelish would play Duncan, right?
Right.
Back
right.
When they're growing up as kids. So, let's see. Then she goes on to kind of talk about the idea that, you know, Gurm was very involved in the early days of the show. And a lot of, if you look at Sansa and a lot of what she's wearing, there's jewelry and dresses that have moths, butterflies, winged imagery, and most commonly dragonflies. And she sent a couple, you know, pictures of her dress just, you know, with sewn in dragonflies and like a dragonfly necklace. And, you know, Sansa's always kind of obsessed with the idea of this love story, somebody who would lay aside their crown for, you know, true love and things like that. So, you know, it's sort of it kind of helps with her character development, you know, and her story arc, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So they just said it was really intentional. And, you know, so this raven is kind of driving towards the question, like, is Sansa somehow connected to the Prince of Dragonflies, i.e. to another Targaryen prince, you know, Jon Snow, question mark. She goes on to say, unfortunately, these are just pieces of what could be a good theory. Do you think there's any merit to them? Also, I don't want you to think that I came up with this on my own. I'm including a very long blog post about Sansa Stark and her connection to Jenny of Old Stones, with a lot of supporting evidence from A Song of Ice and Fire. So there have been Reddit theories. There's been people on Tumblr out there. There's lots of different posts about Sansa's connection to, you know, the Dragonfly Prince and Jenny of Old Stones. So it's just kind of a cool connection to see all of that. And I don't really know what it means, Sir Matt. I'm not really sure exactly myself how Sansa would be tied in, although she was one of the people who we saw, you know, for this.
Right. Yeah.
During the song, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the song, I'm not entirely sure. I explained a lot of it in that Patreon theory we did. But I mean, when you look at when they play it at a time when we've had, in those last two episodes, the only person to really die was that Umber kid, right? And so it's kind of a calm before a storm. It's kind of an eerie song. A lot of people think it's the song that Rhaegar sang that caused women to weep. We talk a lot about this in that Patreon episode. It's a song that Rhaegar sang that caused people to weep. It has ties to Summerhall, which there was a great tragedy, perhaps trying to not just raise dragons, but something to do with Azor Ahai. That could, and maybe so it's going to allude to something that is going to take place. in the next couple episodes.
Well, yeah, exactly. And actually, to the connection, too, with Jenny as well is the Woods Witch who was with her when she went to court made predictions and kind of prophesied that the prince that was promised would come from that specific, you know, Targaryen union, not Duncan and Jenny, but like his that line, you know, his brother and things. And so through Rhaegar. So, you know, Aerys and then Rhaegar. So it's that was kind of neat. And then so if that's the prince who was promised is going to come from that line and the Woods Witch has been very accurate in making predictions in the book series, then you see then they show John and Danny right after the song ends. They show them in the crypts and he reveals who he is. You know what I mean? So it's just,
it's all
like subtle, just backing the idea that he truly is Aegon Targaryen. Whether he's called that in the books or not, you know, he's in the show Aegon Targaryen, son of Rhaegar. So,
I'm right there with you. I definitely had some significance more than just a fan service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, we'll get some more thoughts on that. And hopefully, you know, some of you, if you have thoughts on Jenny of Old Stones or the song, or if there's any connections to Sansa and this dragonfly imagery, we'd love to hear more about that, and we'll do a little bit more research. But I wanted to bring this up just because it did happen last episode, and it's just in 1 week, it's hard to kind of track down, you know, every little thought and theory and thread that comes out in these episodes. So hopefully some of you will be able to help us with that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We also have here, and this is a we have Sir Blake of House Suttles, and I love Sir Blake. You know, he's in the Facebook group, been in there for a bit, and is fantastic. So let me read this. Hello, good lords. This is Sir Blake of House Suttles. This is my first time sending a raven, even though I've been listening to the podcast for several months now. I joined the Facebook group a few months ago and quickly rose to the rank of rising star, then to visual storyteller and conversation starter. I hope to keep up the work on the battlefield, bringing good memes and theories to the group. Mm-hmm. And yes. Actually, Sir Blake, you are killing it, and we wouldn't be able to, you know, do this without you. Always has us laughing and just has some really good threads, you know, started there in the group. So that's fantastic. He's great. So if you haven't gotten the Facebook group, you need to go check this out and interact with these folks. They're good people. This is a show-specific theory, but after the last episode of Thrones, what do you guys think about Arya being pregnant with Gendry's child? If Arya makes it to the end alive and she gives birth to a child, I think it could be legitimized as a Stark by whoever's left on the throne. Kind of like when the Stark line almost ended, then the girl ran off with the Bard, then came back a year later with a baby. Okay, mm-hmm. Tie back to the Stark history. I don't see any other way the Stark line could continue. I, for some reason, don't see Sansa having children, and Bran is so in his own world that he don't care about no girls. I know George R.R. Martin is a cruel man, killing off everyone, but would he really end the Stark line? I know people will say Jon has Stark blood, and he could continue the line, but I've seen several interviews, and it doesn't take a genius to see that Martin's favorite house is Targaryen. Yeah, very true. So,
yeah.
So if Jon does have any kids, they'll for sure be Targs to continue that line from dying out. So what are your thoughts on Arya being pregnant with the future of House Stark or Baratheon? Will any more great houses go extinct?
Yes, definitely. Some great houses are going extinct.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's that stuff I've often wondered, too. You know, what's going to happen with House Stark and, you know, how will their line continue? You know, Sir Matt, you've often said that we're not sure about Rickon in the books and whether he'll survive or not.
Right.
So there's that. Is there someone else they could use against him? You know, that Ramsay could have used during the Battle of Bastards to kind of lure him into a fight besides Rickon. Possibly there could be some other people. So, but I would love the idea. I've always wanted Arya and Gendry to hook up and to be together. Arya is one of my favorite characters and I've loved Gendry. I just didn't think Gendry's one of those characters I've wanted to love since the beginning, but I've always been so afraid that he's going to die that I don't want to get super attached to him, you know?
Yeah, he's never really a character I've thought might die. We've talked about the theory that Gendry is possibly Arya is possibly being chased by Gendry in the crypts, or that's what she's running from is Gendry now as a white. I mean it's obviously possible, but he's a character where they've kept him around for a reason, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they've clearly kept him around this long for a reason. Maybe they forgot about him for a little bit, right? I mean, he was gone for a couple seasons, just out there rowing.
Just out there rowing.
I see him and Arya ending up together. That's kind of my thought. Unless Arya were to die, of course. I think it's.
Yeah.
I almost want to say I think it's more likely that Arya would die than Gendry, but that's definitely not true.
I I think more people might live than we think sometimes. We keep saying they're all going to die. Maybe more of them live than we realize, you know?
Yeah.
So it would be kind of neat. If she is pregnant, that would be freaking awesome. And
I mean, maybe that's the bittersweet thing, is maybe a handful of our favorite of the ultra favorites die. Mm-hmm. I mean, if John, let's say John, Dany, Cersei, Tyrion, Arya died, but everyone else lived.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Be bittersweet. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I feel like it is going to be half and half. I mean, that's something I saw Gwendolyn Christie in one of her interviews was talking about. Some things are really set right and you feel whole and good about them. And then for some characters, you don't. And she's just like, it is literally 50-50.
And her character is one of them.
I think her character is probably one of them.
I think she's dead.
We'll see. We'll see. So, but anyways, yeah. So really cool thought. I would love to see how their line is going to continue. But, you know, as you say, I think some of these great houses might go extinct. You know, we're looking at the Greyjoys we're pretty close to that as well.
Tarly's, and you only got one left.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, you look at in the series, House Gardner back in the day, you know, gone. So some of those houses that were great, you know, a part of the Seven Kingdoms that were rulers or regents or wardens or whatever, you know, and their houses are gone. It's interesting. So, I mean, Baratheon replaces, you know, the Durandons, right? Or whatever.
Yep.
There in the Stormlands. Yep. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, okay. Awesome. Sorry, let's move on here. I think Sir Matt has some ravens here.
Yes, this first one is from Lady Allie Efferson. Mm-hmm. Crazy theory here, but I don't think that the Night King's end goal is Bran. I think it's the Red Woman. What other purpose would the TV show have? What other purpose would the TV show have to show her age? And what other reason would he be going past the wall if it wasn't revenge of some sort? She is, as of right now, the oldest person around that possibly could have any connection and literally be fire, some sort of ice and fire connection. Mm-hmm. She being the fire with the Lord of Light, and he is the ice for the Night King. Just a theory. Yeah, wow. Well, again, not to shamelessly keep plugging the Patreon episode we did last night, but it was all about Melisandre, so check that out, because I give a huge reason as to what her age could entail. I'm with Lady Allie, though. I do believe there is something to do with Melisandre. If it is a battle between R'hllor and the Great Other, or R'hllor versus the Darkness, if the Night King is the Night King the God of Darkness? Is the Night King a champion of the Darkness? Did that God exist before the Night King was created? Or did that come afterwards?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good questions. And here's what I'm thinking, you know. I think he does want Melisandre, but in a different way than we're thinking, okay? And I'm thinking, you know, instead of just regular old shadow babies, we're looking at ice shadow babies, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's a Song of Ice and Fire, man. That's what we've been saying. Mm-hmm. So, no, I don't know. I mean, that's interesting. I think it might be a combination of both, you know? Right. I mean, because what Bran tells us is that he just wants total darkness. He just wants to kind of, you know, reign supreme. And I'm hoping there's more to, you know, to it than that. And it's something personal, you know? But we shall see. And I think he is more of a champion of, you know, the opposite of R'hllor. So the darkness, as you say.
I do think they will explain her age. I do think we will get that explanation of her.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, because are all the other red priestesses that way, or priest, you know, like, have they all been around that long? Why is she unique in that? You know what I mean? Because you've got Thoros, who we saw, and I feel like, was he glamour? You know what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. why is she that old, and why, you know, why is it important to her that she be glamoured? I don't know, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm very interested to learn more about Melisandre, because I think she's a character. We're going to need to learn a little bit more about R'hllor and possibly this battle of ice and fire. There's still a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah. I mean, is it like with, when you have the three-eyed crow or the three-eyed raven, you know, this offshoot that I've never quite understood, really. And you've got the great other, the god of darkness, cold and death, you know, in the faith of R'hllor. And then you've got R'hllor on the Lord of Light. That seems to be the big battle that we're having. But then you've got this, you know, the old gods and this facet of the children. We've gone over this multiple times in the podcast with Lord Adam Parker and others. It'll be interesting to see really what his motives are. I don't think it's as Bran says. I don't think it's just as straightforward as just this ominous, dark, right. You know. There's something else. There's something personal. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Lady Allie, for that, Raven. Moving on. I think you have a few long ones, and I have a few shorter ones.
Sure. Sure.
Lord Matt of House Prim, any chance that the Second Sons, or perhaps another group, have infiltrated the Golden Company? If so, whose idea would it have been? Dario, unlikely. Varys, possibly. A forward-thinking idea by Tyrion, that would be a good path towards tactical redemption. Without infiltration, perhaps something else weakens them. Poison, food, or drink, a spell by Melisandre. Oh, and the Night King symbol. Why is no one suggesting the Greyjoy sigil? It looks just as similar as the dragon. Personally, I think it's more a symbol from the children instead of a house. Yeah, so let's tackle the first part first.
Mm-hmm.
The Golden Company. I do think it would be really cool and interesting if we saw Dario Naharis again. I do think it would be cool. I'm leaning towards the idea that we won't, because then that leaves his character as this person that Dany had to leave behind in order to try and get the thing she wanted most, which is the Iron Throne. Mm-hmm. I would love to see Dario again. I don't think it's going to happen. I think his ending in the books could be different, could be more specific, because remember in the books you're not, the Golden Company isn't just sell swords, you're talking about Blackfyre rebellions and things like that. So I do think Dario will have kind of a different path in the books. I think they're probably similar, but slightly different in the way it ultimately plays out. Do you think we'll see Dario?
I mean, kind of hope we do, you know, like you, but I hope it's maybe, I don't think we're going to see him. I hope so, but no. And I feel like the only way we would, though, is I think the way this person indicated is that he would be infiltrating maybe the Golden Company.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he unexpectedly sails, you know, his forces across
to
aid them in some way. Yeah.
Right.
Which would
I think if that were the case, it would be much more likely that we'd see him, assuming Dany survives the Battle of King's Landing, that we're, of course, assuming is going to happen.
Hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that could be. He'd also have to kind of not disobey her orders, but I mean, you know, he was left there for a reason to kind of keep mm-hmm. order, you know. So maybe he found another way to do that, and then he just knows that she's in dire need and does come to the rescue. That would be cool. That would be really cool.
Yeah. Okay, so the idea of possibly Varys or Tyrion or Melisandre having something to hurt them. If or any, I think it'd be much... the most likely that it would be Varys having something to do, especially given his kind of status on the other side. Illyrio. Do you think we'll see Illyrio again? They've said a lot that these characters things, threads that you thought were long forgotten will come back.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. I don't understand that. So yeah, maybe Illyrio could come back, and because Varys has been, as I said, last episode, I believe that he's been very quiet. We haven't heard much from him, and I think that's interesting.
So far, all we've really heard from this season was him talking about why Tyrion keeps making eunuch jokes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So there's got to be more. I mean, he could even weigh in on that conversation about, you know, maybe some of these parenting or parentage conversations. You know, he was around during the time of the old the Mad King. Right. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, absolutely. Okay, and so the Night King symbol being possibly a Greyjoy symbol. Or do you think it is just more something to do with the children instead?
I like the children idea. I was never even really sold on the whole it looking like a Targaryen situation either. You know, when you look back at his creation and you look at some of the other season, well, I think it's season one, episode one, you know, kind of some of the patterns and designs that they make. I don't know. Unless it was the person who was turned and they know their own sigil and they're, you know, using that in some way to identify that it was their kill that they made, you know, and so that's a former whoever, and that would help identify. I don't know, but yeah, I think it's more of a children connection. Right.
Well, the show creators released that image. Did you see that art image? I was on Twitter and Instagram kind of floating around where like the show creators had kind of talked about it. It's kind of a reverse of the Children of the Forest in that it is kind of like it's in a way like what some people had described. It's kind of like their upside down cross. Right. As slap in the face of it.
Okay. Okay. Let me look here. I'll look it up while we move on. But yeah, I could see that. I mean, I don't know. There's too many houses for in Greyjoy, House Greyjoy, for that to be, you know, Targaryen. Maybe I kind of get that because of the role that they play. But also, if you look at these White Walkers and when they were formed and when the children created them, I feel like it's much earlier. It's I don't know that the Valyrians or that the Targaryens were involved at that time in the history.
Well,
even though they're still
if you go to the deep histories, there is all that weird stuff about the Seastone Chair and how it had been there when they when they kind of found Pike. Also, the Drowned God is, I think there's something really interesting there. The saying "What's dead may never die," and when we think about the Night King, and there's been a lot. But even R'hllor has caused things to come back to life, and then we see Qyburn, you know, keep bringing back the mountain with kind of weird alchemy and stuff. So, yeah, it is possible there is some connection all the way at the end. Okay.
Yeah.
Lady Roxanna Cardenas, I believe. Mm-hmm. Why is no one asking Bran how the Whites were defeated before? Great question. Unfortunately, the answer is because that would be far too easy.
Yes.
Sir Ezra, I know you also are involved in some Lord of the Rings projects. Why don't they just use the eagles to fly the ring to Mordor?
Hey, man. Hey, I don't. Hey, well, don't even go there.
I know it's too easy. It's too easy. But that is a great question. And it is something that I think Bran may have to specifically know where to look.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though Bran has the ability to see anything and everything, and he says that, if you go back to the scene where Sam, at the end of season 7, when Sam is talking to Bran about Jon's parentage, and he says, "No, I read a book, and the book says that their marriage was annulled." He's like, "You're sure of this?" And then he knows where to go look, and then he sees that. So Bran hadn't seen it before, so it is possible Bran just doesn't know where to look.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. Well, and also, I keep wondering, you know, we see him sitting out in the courtyard, too. You know, could he be sitting next to the Weirwood more often and maybe trying to get into that network? Also, you can look at maybe the idea that when they destroyed a lot of them, they cut down a lot of the Weirwoods, maybe his sight is limited in that capacity. But then, as you say, we're told that he can see so much further than beyond just the Weirwood network. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's why haven't
I mean,
we asked
the that? obvious answer is, of course, because it's too easy. I mean, that's the real answer. Okay. Lady, I hope I'm pronouncing this, Rajal Guinevere. They call you King Killer. Hey guys, I started listening to Bend the Knee last spring and have been so grateful for your awesome content, especially towards the end of our 2-year drought. Anyway, along with the millions of others, I lost my mind over the new season, and overall, I'm super pleased with what's been released to us thus far. Writing today to make a comment about the King Killer comment Tormund makes to Jaime. I absolutely love the scene because I immediately perceived it as a bit of an olive branch offering from Tormund to Jaime hours before they all need to inconceivably band together and fight for the good fight. Basically, when T begins, he goes, They call you this and they call me that, and proceeds to debunk the myth of his super tough nickname he's got. Yeah, it's a cool story, but referencing the books, there's Giant's Bane and then there's Giant's Babe. I just really dug this. This is why they call me, but the story's different. This is they call you this, insert implied, I bet the story's different. Jamie is one of my favorite characters, show and books, so I was over the moon for this immediate acceptance from T to J. When was the last time anyone took Jamie for actual face value? I stinking love Tormund, love following the new season with your content between episodes, and hope you guys might kind of see where I'm coming from with this. Thank you so much and keep it up. There are tons who depends on it, Raj. First of all, thank you for being a very loyal listener. Anybody who has listened to us at all, we still, yeah, to this day, are just like, it's kind of mind-boggling, actually, that people listen to us talk about Game of Thrones for for so long. And we love doing it. It's so much fun. It's what's even more fun is when you guys write, honestly, when you guys write into us, because we like, yeah, this is awesome. And we reference, especially the people that we talk about a lot. Obviously, like Lord Adam Parker and Lady Jade and stuff like that. So people who've been with us kind of from the beginning. And we've become friends with people on Facebook and Instagram, and feel free to follow us. And we will follow you back, because it's just cool to, so much fun to engage with people and stuff like that. But Sir Ezra and I would talk about that. Like, did you see this? Did you see that? It's so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, and this sort of shows like how passionate, you know, she is about this character, just kind of like we are, you know? And so it's cool to see that energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think it's Lady Rage Genevieve, I think is. So yeah, I just wanted to get her last Genevieve, I think.
Oh, did I say Guinevere? Cool. Oh, did I say Guinevere? Yeah. Oops, my bad.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's okay.
My mind's obviously all in
dude, we have so many people places. Coming. Like, we've read so many Ravens, it's unreal. So, but yeah, this is super cool. Now, I wanted to make a comment, though.
It's a really good Raven.
Yeah, it is. Because the idea is that, yeah, there's more to you. There's more to your story or more to your title than meets the eye. You know, and here's the true telling of my story. And maybe there's going to be a moment on the battlefield where, you know, Jamie sort of, you know, addresses the whole King Killer comment and sort of breaks bread with Tormund. I think that'd be kind of a cool moment for them, just as they're slaying, you know, the dead and just sort of doing their thing.
Tormund is also the perfect character to have this interaction with Jamie, because Tormund doesn't care about the Game of Thrones. They don't care. The Wildling people don't care about that.
Yeah.
They just care about survival and life. Yeah.
Yeah, you saved people. Awesome. Yeah. Why aren't you the most honored person here?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's what he says about Brienne. He's, why, if I were a king, I'd knight you.
Yeah, knight 10 times over. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they don't. That's something we get from a lot of the Wildlings is this about castles and stuff like that. They don't know it. They don't really care about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a cool exchange. And it is sort of a, hey, we're on the same side. And let's have this sit down moment, you know, and that's why that conversation around that fireplace is just so epic. Mm-hmm. So many good things like this happen right there. It's one of the best scenes in Game of Thrones history.
Oh, ever. It's such a good final scene for a lot of those characters who aren't gonna survive.
Right. Yeah. So. Okay.
Okay. Perfect. Sir Craig of House Brinkman, I love the podcast and a new. For this season, but I'm going to go back through once this season is done. I could be mistaken, but there is no sign of the Night King and Viserion in the teaser for episode 3. This makes me think he won't be present at Winterfell and instead has gone to King's Landing to kill and recruit a larger army to attack from the south if need be. Mm-hmm. Great Raven. This is something a lot of people have talked about. We haven't seen the Night King, to my knowledge, in any of the teaser stuff at all, have we? Not that I can remember.
No. I saw him looking for directions in one of the behind the scenes.
That meme that has come out. Have you seen a boy in a wheelchair and people are
right?
Boy.
Yeah,
yeah, that's really funny. So yeah, I mean, I definitely think he will show up during this battle. I don't know if he's gonna die during the battle.
Right. Well, let's combine two Ravens here. So you know, Sir Craig actually. It's on a point that Sir Cody and then my next Raven hits on as well too. So I'll read these and we'll talk to Sir Cody and Sir Craig at the same time here. Sir Cody says, I have been listening to you guys for the last month. Your podcast is fantastic. One theory that I'm not sure anyone has come up with is where the Night King will be. It seems to be 50-50 split between people who think the Night King will fight in Winterfell or beeline it to King's Landing. Mm-hmm. But what if, in lieu of Bran's predictions about him wanting to wipe out the memory of man, instead goes to Old Town and burns the Citadel to the ground? We would at least cover the irony of Samwell basically begging them to believe his story about the White Walkers and the Night King in the fact that they were to tell all the lords of Westeros to build an army, they would listen to them. So that's what he tells those awkward wording, but the way he kind of, you know, tells the maesters, the archmaesters, like, hey, warn, they'll listen to you guys. Get us ready. Build the armies up. He says it would be ironic if all of those maesters who didn't believe Sam's theory were burned by the Ice Dragon. What do you think? So to go with Sir Craig, you know, and Sir Cody's idea that, like, maybe the reason we haven't seen him is because where we're going to see him is in a place we least expect him, you know? Mm-hmm. And that may take Dany and Jon or one of them away from, you know, from Winterfell, perhaps. I don't know. I don't know if they could get there in time, or I don't know. You know, there's not like you can pick up the phone and call and say, hey, he's down here. You know what I mean? So that's kind of tough. But yeah, it's interesting to think that he might not be at Winterfell. I just feel like Bran would know about that, don't you? Like, it would, like also, doesn't he, maybe he, if he's not there, he can't be killed. And so if the, you know, the whole idea is if you take out the Night King, well, then you can kill his army. Well, if he's not there to be killed, can he still control them? Or does he just pass on that control to his, you know, his underlings, you know, some of the other White Walkers?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting that we haven't. I do really like the idea about him going and destroying Old Town. And I think that would be a very fitting,
wiping away the memory.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's a cool thought. Something I hadn't thought of at all. And so we've talked about King's, I think it'll eventually get to King's Landing, but you know, you could see the need maybe for them to retreat back, and you know, everyone's making plans and laying these plans, and I just feel like it never works out the way you want to. These, you know, the best laid plans of men often go askew or, you know, astray or whatever. And so Cersei in King's Landing, she's building this army up, and she's like, all the, you know, the dead have broken through, and she's like, good, you know. And it's like, really, why don't you eat your words here in a second? Mm-hmm. Maybe they're coming straight for you. You know what I mean? And wouldn't that be ironic? So
yeah, I mean, maybe Cersei is Azor Ahai. Maybe Cersei is the princess who is promised. I mean, she's that person. If you need something done, you know, done right, do it yourself. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, that's awesome.
Okay, let's move on over to Sir Ezra's Ravens.
Yeah, here. So we have another one here. So thanks, Sir Cody and Sir Craig. We have Joao of House Vase, maybe House Voss, second of his name. And he's from Portugal. So this is kind of cool. We're getting ravens from all over, which is great. Dear sirs, first of all, love the podcast. Only started listening 2 weeks ago, but it's already one of the one that I'm looking most forward to. Wow, that's awesome. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
What do you think of this theory? The Night King skips Winterfell and goes straight to King's Landing, flying in his new vehicle, kills a large amount of people there with his fire/ice-breathing dragon, turning them to wights immediately, who kill the rest. Now he pretty much has, you know, 20,000 more soldiers who start heading north. I have no idea how the Battle of Winterfell is going to be, but let's suppose the living people's strategy will fail and the ones who survive will try to run south. They are cornered now. I know there's some, you know, discrepancies in this, like the fact that the Night King is after Bran and probably wants to get him as fast as he can. But hey, just a thought for now, and wanted to share. So kind regards. I like people bringing these different ideas up. And, you know, if you think about this massive army is set up here at Winterfell. And the place is called Winterfell. And if the Night King knows anything about it and knows where Bran is at, and has him marked and does truly is able to track him, a surprise attack on King's Landing would be crazy. it would be something I would not have foreseen. And I think would be, you know, amazing. If they have to retreat back to like the Trident or like some epic, you know, spot where there's some, this last battle happens there at the neck or something, and the children come back again. And remember how they were trying to break the neck? At one point they were trying to flood it, you know, and raise the waters back in the day. This is, again, that's like back in like, I don't know, back in the Age of Heroes.
Dawn
and
Age
things, when,
and stuff like that. Right?
Yeah, when they're fighting, you know, the First Men. That would be epic if they, the children can somehow, if there's some great ceremony that they could do, or it just gets to be this huge epic tale. I don't think it's going to happen that way, but it would be cool to see them kind of pinned down, cornered, and like, then they would have to, as I said earlier, go Super Saiyan. Somebody's going to have to like really step up and start to lay waste to people if they're surrounded on both sides from the north and the south.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of people that think that. There's the people who believe that the Night King is going to be able to raise the entire crypts of Winterfell. And they keep talking about the crypts is the safest place. Yeah, the fact that I think the fact that we haven't seen him is just because they don't want to tease anything about him. They've done a really good job about keeping spoilers at bay. I know that the episodes have aired a little bit early. These past 2 weeks, I think the first week it was like DirecTV. If you had it through DirecTV, you were able to watch it an hour early, and then Amazon Prime version, you're able to watch it an hour early. Yeah. I'm just gonna keep watching HBO Go.
Yeah, I'm a traditionalist.
I my brother pays hard money for me to use his account. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Hey, shout out to Nick, by the way.
It's my brother. He is my brother. Has been.
Oh, great.
In the group, but it's my brother Jeremy who I.
Jiminy Christmas. Shout out to him too.
Yeah. So. So. Where was I going before we gave them? Oh, absolutely. So the fact that they've kept spoilers at bay. I just don't think they want to show the Night King at all.
Yeah. Right. Well, and it, that also lends credence, though, to some of these theories that
absolutely.
The reason they don't show him is
that
he is
going to King's Landing.
Yeah, or that he is somehow knows a back door into the crypts and just comes walking in.
And then Cersei's plan will have backfired miserably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when she should have been allied with them and could have given them a better fighting chance, you know, and yeah, she ends up screwing the whole realm. Yeah, literally. So, all right. Let's move on here. So we have Sir Jared of House Black. Another thought here on the White Walkers. I believe to this point we've only seen 12 to 13 White Walkers in one scene, leading us to believe that there aren't that many. But if you go now by how many sons Craster gave them, I think it was 99, and if you read the Season 8, Episode 7 script when describing the scene at Eastwatch, just before the wall falls, it says 100,000 Whites and hundreds of White Walkers. So this fight may be even harder than we thought. Love the podcast. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that they're, you know, I mean, I know that we've had Lord Adam Parker and others talk about the idea that there could be 12 to 13 and the significance of the number 13, 13th Lord Commander, you know, all that stuff, tying back into the text and the, you know, the idea of the last tier and all that goodness. But there could actually be hundreds of White Walkers and that could be the sons of Craster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that would be kind of crazy. I think here we go. I have another raven that kind of that ties to Sir Jared's as well, and so it's Lady Sarah, the Unraveler. So we haven't heard from her in a bit, but this is a and she I love the way she writes too. So no spell check, no read over, just fast and furious typing. So kind of apologizes for, and some of these are just, you know, awkward wording. So when we read them, it's a little bit tough sometimes to read, but that's okay. So hello, good sirs. Imagine this. There is a non-human king banished to a land that is always winter. Your friends are dead, nonverbal zombie skeletons. One of the only humans who dares to come near him accepts a deal from this king to give him all of the sons that are born from him.
Right.
For, say, 99 sons or so, the man is true to his word, giving the king son after son to do as he pleases with. Each son becomes a prince under his charge. He is, for lack of a better word, the king becomes their father. Okay,
wow.
So
this is really good.
These sons become princes who are promised to him, a king. when the 100th, give or take, son promised to him doesn't show up for its eye color changing ceremony, he gets pissed. I would imagine he would find any means necessary to get this child back, cut through armies of the living, track down an ancient horn, or maybe kill a dragon to use it to fly south of the wall. For thousands of years, he's been in a seemingly desolate Iceland with, you know, a 700 plus foot wall keeping him away from the land of rainbows and sunshines and iron thrones, which he wouldn't be able to sit on anyways without turning into a mini blizzard and truly dying. True, the Iron Throne is not something that he would want to sit on anyways, really.
Yeah,
right, because of the, you know, the whole bit about iron being something that they're resistant, that, you know, hurts them. If that throne thing happens in the show, I'll scream. Him going to sit down on the throne and then poof. Okay, side rant over. If the Night King is truly after Bran and Bran alone, he could easily have done it back in the Hodor episode. Leaving his mark on Bran makes him capable of seeing into Bran's thoughts. Maybe not his actual powers, and knowing his location. Okay, so, you know, why not? Again, we've said this before with the Night King. Why not kill this person or that person here or there? Why is he... What's going on? You know, who's he really looking for? He has been spying on Winterfell and its inhabitants since the day Bran wheeled his way back in there. Whether Bran realizes it or not, he is giving the Night King virtually intel, vital intel on their fighting positions, who will be on the front lines fighting, and most importantly, who will be kept safe below the crypts, the elderly, children, and most vulnerable. Bran will be out in the open, surrounded by some of the best warriors the world has to offer. Everyone is focused solely on Bran. I believe the Night King has planted the wrong seed in Bran's brain. With everyone of fighting power above, he is free to go after his true target, the child that was promised to him, but taken away with the help of Samwell Tarly, in a smaller part, Jon Snow. Baby Samwell was under contract to be given to the Night King, and now he's come for him. So, as many theories propose, the Night King could be en route to King's Landing to get Cersei and her, what I think is blood magic, Melisandre-type baby, not Jaime's, unborn child, and a southern army of the dead to bring all the way up to Winterfell. But I don't know. The idea of him being physically under Winterfell, lurking around in the ancient tunnels, trying to find his way into the crypts via the caved-in area, showing up to everyone's horror while he takes baby Sam and turns all the dead Starks into zombie skeletons seems so much cooler, pun intended. I haven't really heard anything about baby Sam having this Harry Potter chosen one type relationship with the Night King, or frankly anybody discussing the possibility of him being mad about not getting his Craster baby at all. The novels focus so much on saving Mance's baby from Melisandre that we kind of forget that Gilly's baby may hold far more importance in terms of danger. I'll finish this up with a question. Where did baby Sam end up after Jon switched Mance's boy with Gilly's? Okay. So, I mean, thoughts there, Sir Matt, just on like the idea that this could be, he could be targeting one of the princes that was promised to him.
Yeah, I love the idea that you brought up about those being princes that were promised. Not something I'd thought of. And that's another thing. That's another story angle we don't know, right? There's a lot of explaining to do as we.
Oh yeah.
If this next episode is all battle, it's 4 and 5 are gonna have to be aftermath, and maybe 6 is just second big battle. But if you look at episodes 1 and 2, I mean, how much story did we got a ton of story content in episodes 1 and 2. Then we have a big, huge battle. All right, now let's gear up and try and work through as much of the story as we need to get you ready for the final showdown. And that's one thing is these children and their significance.
Right. Right.
And so. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, Sam, that Craster's baby. I don't know if, do you think Craster actually met the Night King and talked to him? Or do you think he just started putting the babies outside because he didn't want anyone to ever grow up and challenge him or whatever? He just didn't want kids around. And then they started taking him, and then they never seemed to bother him because he was just kind of openly offering them sacrifices.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe, you know, even the Night King could have shown up and pointed and just, like, maybe he has his first male child and just comes and takes him, and then he realizes that, okay, if I give him these, you know, these babies, these male children, he'll leave me alone, and he leaves me the women, I mean, or the females. I don't know.
He's actively helping him produce an army. And I don't think the Night King is just some, I think the Night King has a thought process, right? He's not just some zombie guy. I think there's definitely a thought process to it, because we talked about it. Why didn't he kill John and those guys when they were on on the lake? He can kill a dragon. He can take an ice spear and hit a dragon flying in the air. Was he waiting for the dragon? Did he know that was going to come? Did he want to see what would happen? He could have just picked them all off right then and there, but he had other plans. There was the person who sent us the Raven last time about the Night King being a showboat. I think there's something to that too. So yeah. I think there's a reason he didn't kill John then and there.
Yeah. Yeah. And to go back, you know, on Lady Sarah's, you know, thoughts here with the baby ends up, you know, again, being switched, right? So we have Gilly's baby staying up there at Castle Black,
right?
And is often referred to as the abomination, the little monster, the sweet little monster. You know, the wildlings don't believe in giving a name this early, but the baby is referred to as this sweet little monster, which is kind of crazy, right? And so if you go to the wiki, you just type in monster, it'll come right up.
Yeah.
And there's this whole bit about, you know, keeping the baby away from Melisandre and even Princess Shireen because of her grayscale, which may just be kind of like, you know, they don't quite understand it, the free folk, you know. So Val is there with the baby often and comments on the baby, and there's the baby's being raised right there. It's growing strong on, you know, through the milkmaids that there's something there. I think that actually is we're gonna see. There's got to be something. They've focused on that baby so much, and Gilly is still around. What is Gilly's role and her significance? And, you know, a mother's love, is that going to come into play in protecting her baby, you know, being some part to stopping the Night King? I don't know. But I like this. I really like this Raven. I thought
it's a really good one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. All right, let's move on here. So we have, let's see, the Crypts and what Bran told Tyrion. So this is Sir John of House Grey. Writes in here, says, just recently found your podcast and wanted to say how much I've enjoyed it and wanted to throw out a few ideas or theories. First, I don't think the Night King can raise just any dead person to become a white. And this is what we were talking about, is that, you know, the Night King is limited. You know, can't just raise, you know, 1,000 dead polar bears, you know, or whatever up there. He has to actually turn them or kill them himself. I think he can only raise those who were killed by his forces. So someone killed by him, a White Walker or a white soldier. Otherwise, he could just go around various areas and raise every animal or person from the dead. I mean, why not have a whole legion of white walking polar bears? Therefore, he can't raise the dead in the crypts, and the focus on the crypts is for some other reason. My theory is with the big crowd down there. Somehow, Jon Snow's mother's crypt will be disturbed or opened by a kid or something or someone, and they will find a harp inside and start playing with it. Someone will notice and ask where it came from, and the secret will be accidentally revealed to all of Winterfell. Second theory, Tyrion doesn't find out he's a Targaryen in his chat with Bran, but he does find out all of the previous events in history where wars were fought against dragons, and now has some intel on how to deal with the Night King's dragon and how to protect the living dragons. So there you go. Yeah. Just a couple of thoughts from Sir John. I've always liked the idea of finding a ring or, you know, a harp or
right.
some other object in Lyanna's tomb, you know, to kind of connect back to John or Lyanna and Rhaegar being more of a love story versus a kidnapping and a rape.
I read this one earlier today. I really liked it. The idea that they've referenced the crypts a lot. They've referenced Lyanna's tomb specifically a lot in the books. We know that she gets a tomb when no other people do. Is there going to be something that's going to be significant of that? Yeah. Normally it's just for the lords.
The, Yeah, the Kings of Winter and the Lords of Winter. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's interesting. So that'll be kind of neat. Now, what do you think about Tyrion's conversation with Bran? You know,
that's... yeah, it's something we talked about a little bit earlier in this podcast. I think Tyrion's going to learn something that's going to be valuable down the line.
Yeah, you think specifically maybe like it could be about the dragons and how to kill
could
the
be.
Night King's dragon.
Yeah, possibly. Okay.
Yeah, that would be neat. That would be neat to kind of hear. He's always been fascinated with, you know, he has that debate with the Half Maester in the books about dragons and how they were killed and who the events of the Dance of Dragons, I think it was, and they kind of go back and forth on which book they were referencing and things like that. So he definitely knows a lot about dragon lore and you know, to get any inconsistencies or misconceptions shored up or figured out through his conversation with Bran would be awesome. Would be really cool to hear.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay. All right, let's move on. We've got, let's see here, Sir Mark of House Springer. So here we go. Hey guys, just found your podcast and I've been getting ready for season 8. Big fan of the show, but I'm a stranger to the book, so I have no idea how much they relate or what does and doesn't carry over to the film. But I have a few thoughts on what could be a solid ending, a storyline that would satisfy the shocking tragedy that we've become used to, but also wouldn't leave us completely empty-handed and depressed. Oh boy, I hope so.
Uh-oh.
Because, yeah. I'm sure we'll see a lot of death in these last 4 episodes, but just killing everyone off wouldn't leave anyone satisfied or fans happy. They've spent way too much time developing these characters over the years that it would be a bad move for the show's legacy. I also don't think they can have a blockbuster-type ending where Jon and Dany live happily ever after and successfully rid of all the evil in Westeros. We know Valyrian steel can defeat a white, but there's no way the Night King will come close to anyone that could use it on him. So as a human, you would have to get through, 100,000 dead in his army, which isn't going to happen, even with fire and dragon glass. If you were immortal, though, and couldn't die because your army doesn't possess the weapon that can destroy you, wouldn't that give you a chance? So basically the idea is, yeah, if you're immortal or have some extra special power, if you're Super Saiyan, as I said, and couldn't die because, your enemy doesn't have the thing that can destroy you or doesn't know how to destroy you, wouldn't that give you a chance is what he's saying.
Yeah.
It would make sense to me if Jon realizes this and basically sacrifices himself to defeat the Night King in order to save the Seven Kingdoms by turning into a White Walker himself. This could be done by calling upon the Children of the Forest or possibly with the help of Melisandre and the Lord of Light? It's not explained that becoming a white makes you evil. The Night King just happened to turn evil by turning Jon into a white, look at Cold Hands. We should bring Cold Hands up eventually.
Yeah.
Talk about him. By turning Jon into a white, not by the Night King's doing, he shouldn't be under his control and would be invincible. White against white in a final showdown where only one of them holds Valyrian steel. I like Jon's chances. Once the Night King is defeated, his army should fall too. Dany could then go down and fight her war and take back the throne herself. And Jon lives on forever in the north of the wall, similar to the Night King, where he will return one day once men have become corrupt again and the Game of Thrones has gotten out of hand. I'm probably way off, but it would make sense to me. I just wanted to write this down and send it to someone just in case there's any validity to it. Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks so much, Sir Mark of House Springer. Yeah. Sir Matt, any thoughts there?
Yeah, the idea that Jon would kill himself, man. What would
that he would become immortal, that he would, basically, he'd be cursed in a sense.
That's kind of like some people have claimed like the Pirates of the Caribbean, right? Somebody has to become the Night King. Something along that lines.
A placeholder.
A placeholder.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I think it's interesting. It would be sad. It would be bittersweet. I don't know how they're going to get that done. I feel like it won't be episode 3. It would have to be. Their initial plan is not to turn anybody to a white, as far as we know. I like this thought, though. We've had multiple people say it, and I've read, different articles out there talking about Theon turning Bran into a white and pulling this whole ceremony. But I think it might happen after. If it were to happen, it would happen after their defeat, and they realize, okay,
right,
we've got to do something to up the game here, and we're surrounded and it looks like there's no way out. And then we're going to be speculating as to like, how do they even win this thing? You know, and then maybe they don't, you know, so that's another option. But yeah, I also like, you know, the thoughts here from Sir Mark, just that like, not everyone is going to die. You know, we do have to have some folks who are going to live on and be, you know, carry on the legacy and things like that too. So yeah, totally agree there. But yeah, I don't know, man, I'm really interested in seeing whether, what magics and what powers are going to play into defeating the Night King. He's
right.
No ordinary opponent, you know?
Right.
So, because we always have, we always rank people like, oh, you know, who would win in a fight? You know, Sir Jaime Lannister in his prime or Sir Barristan Selmy? And Matt will tell you, Sir Barristan Selmy.
I mean,
is no
damn
slouch.
Straight, obviously, absolutely. Yeah, he's the boss.
He's the boss, yeah. So, we talk about just mortal men there fighting each other. And now you're talking about Jon Snow, who we haven't really seen, you know, I mean, he's a great fighter, but he'd have to go toe to toe with the Night King.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think
too, if anybody's going to, I think it's going to be him.
For sure. But just think about that for a second. You know, it's like, how tough is that? It's just so, because Gurm is kind of a realist, you know, and even though he's got magic in there, it's sort of like a guy with, I mean, he does have, you know, the Targaryen blood, and there is some power in that, but we just have to learn more about it and how it's going to help him defeat the Night King, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I'm with you.
Okay, let's move on here to Lady Michelle. Hi, guys. Love the podcast. Great work. Really enjoy it. So I think Jon's claim to the throne gives him huge leverage and negotiating power over Dany. From the Sansa/Dany conversation, we know the issue of North independence is a key issue. Jon can challenge Dany's claim to the Iron Throne, but let's be honest, he doesn't really want it. So Jon could strike a deal with Dany, let her sit the Iron Throne, but give the North its independence with Sansa ruling Winterfell or whatever is left of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't see Dany wanting to kill Jon. I think she's just upset because it's, why are you bringing this up? Right? Especially because they're in Winterfell. Maybe she's a little bit vulnerable about the idea. Mm-hmm. She had already talked about potentially needing to marry somebody. She already talked she loves Jon. Jon doesn't want it. I mean, what was her plan anyway? Her plan is to take the Iron Throne and then what?
Yeah.
You're going to be queen and you're going to rule. And I guess, are you ever going to, cause she doesn't think she can have children. So what would happen after? And that's something Tyrion brought up. Mm-hmm. So maybe now she thinks, okay, maybe I can have children. Mm-hmm. And I already love Jon anyway. So I think that's kind of how that's going to end up playing out.
Mm-hmm.
Is she'll be a little more accepting of it because the idea is they can rule together. Jon doesn't want to rule anyway. So
yeah, because she's just kind of torn between this, you know, revenge tour, or this vengeance that she wants to take. I mean, look at her conversation with Jaime Lannister, you know, and all these old memories, you know, coming up about what we would do to the man who killed our father, you know, and how we're going to, you know, the usurper's dogs and how,
right.
You know, they're going to take the throne back and all that good stuff. So that's there. That's underneath. But as she gets this power and she sees it as, and she obtains the throne, I feel like, yeah, like you say, what's left then? So
right.
She's maybe starting to realize that as she gets super close here, and she's fighting for something more than just a throne now. And that's better. That's what it was with the slaves, you know, in Marine and in different places, that like she had a cause and she was fighting for these people, and it was bigger than just
right.
her.
Right.
You know, being the conqueror, you know, or whatever, the ruler. So, okay, awesome. Thank you, Lady Michelle. Appreciate that. That's cool. I wanted to kind of, that's something I'm sure we're going to get more development between Sansa and Dany as we go on. There's something there. There's a rift there between those characters. It's interesting. A rift now is formed between, a little rift between Jon and Dany, it started, you know, kind of between Sansa and Jon, and then Arya's trying to, don't forget about your family. It's all getting really, you know, tense. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Yep. So we have Dakota of House Shuck here. Hi, host. I have a question/theory about Jon Snow and his parentage and role. Ever since learning that Jon was the son of Rhaegar Targaryen, I have begun to wonder if Jon was the true dragon. When Dany gave Khal Drogo permission to burn Viserys with the molten gold, she said, quote, "He was not a dragon. Dragons do not burn." Daenerys has showed time and time again that she is the unburnt. And the dragons have shown love to her as she is the true dragon. On Dragonstone, Drogo, showed love to John, allowed John to pet him, and Dany even said that was abnormal of him to do. So is John a dragon? Can he be burned? He's already established a relationship with Rhaegal, the dragon, in episode one. John even said, it's like he knew where I wanted to go. This is just an interesting thing to think about, and maybe Dany will test the theory of John, of is John a dragon, by attempting to burn him in a later episode.
Ooh, love the show. Wow, yeah.
Love the show. Keep it up. Wowzers. Yeah, I mean, I think maybe inadvertently he might, you know, there might be some fire, flame, or whatever, or like might be an accident, and he walks through it, and she's worried that she's killed him or whatever, you know, in some fight, or maybe he does.
Well, remember if they really want to do bring stuff back from the earlier episodes,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember season one when Viserys is being burned, just fire cannot harm a dragon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, maybe dragons do not burn. Maybe, mm-hmm. Yeah, dragons do not burn. Maybe John faces fire and somehow doesn't get burnt by it.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm hoping. I mean, I'm hoping there's a quick little, that's, again, all these little subtle things, Jenny's song, you know, the harp, the all these different things that might kind of indicate that he is, you know, a Targaryen. My biggest thing, by the way, too, is just his connection to Lyanna. Even though we've got that he's got the Stark blood and stuff, you know, we've got a lot of strong connections between Lyanna and Rhaegar. I don't want to go down this rabbit hole right now, but to me, in the book, it's going to have to answer a lot more about how we connect John to Lyanna.
Absolutely. So, yep, Stark. Absolutely.
But anyways, yeah, so cool. Thank you, Dakota. Appreciate that. Let's see here. We have Sir Drew. So Sir Drew says, good day, sirs. Quick prediction on the ending of Brienne and Jaime. With Jaime knighting her, I think it's almost a definite that Jaime will not survive the Battle of Winterfell, but he will have a valiant death, probably saving Bran. Down the road, after Cersei is defeated, I believe that Brienne will be named to the next king's or / queen's guard and be named Lord Commander. In this role, she'll get to do what Jaime could not, write down Jaime's deeds worthy of the White Book.
Yeah, that'd be super cool.
Pretty cool.
That'd be a very fitting end.
Fitting. Uh-huh. Yep. So just a neat little end to summarize one of the more meaningful relationships of the series. Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be really cool. And, you know, the other bit that I liked here, let's see, is that he'll have a valiant death saving Bran, you know?
Right.
Perhaps.
Which would be interesting, kind of redeeming himself for what he did at the very beginning, yeah.
Yeah, because, again, like Theon, Jaime's one of those characters that you kind of, like, you're annoyed with. He's annoying. He's kind of, you know, we don't like the Lannisters right out the gate, but we like Tyrion. And then he gets his hand cut off, and then you start to learn more about him, and you're like, by the end, you're rooting for him, you know, when you hated him to start. And it's just such a great,
right?
I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's such a cool,
yeah, he's
a, cool
yeah, he's
journey
a,
to go
a,
on.
He's an anti-hero, right? Where he then you end up liking him by the end.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right, here, let's see. Wow, who's this next one here? I don't know. How did I do this? This is Lady Jessica. Mm-hmm. I think we have here.
Yeah.
So, okay. Hi, guys. My name is Lady Jessica. I've been a fan of Game of Thrones since the beginning, and I listened to the books, but I just started listening to the podcast the last couple of months. And I have to say, Bend the Knee is my favorite. Wow. You know what?
Hey.
You know what?
I know.
Lady Jessica, I mean, you just went to the tippy top of the list. You know? Somebody, we're going to, you know, hit us up. We're gonna have to make you a sigil now. You know? You're going to be. Okay. Cool.
Right.
So thanks. We appreciate that. This will probably be a long email, but I have a lot that I'm thinking about. So the first question that's been running through my mind is, what would make Jaime kill Cersei? Jaime knows who she is and what she does. I mean, look at all of the horrible things she has done, like blowing up the Sept, killing all those people.
Right.
And yet, you know, he still hasn't killed her. There is one thing I could think of that would make Jaime kill Cersei. That is, if she was the reason for Brienne's death. Wow.
Wow, yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah, if Cersei somehow kills Brienne or has her killed or something, or is the reason for it, and then that would enrage Jaime. Yeah, man, after he's the guy. Because that's a special, special relationship. You mm-hmm. know, he knighted her. You know, he always talks about his knighting ceremony, and people are always, you know, it's so cool. And it's so cool to hear Dunk talk about Sir Arlen of Pennytree, you know, who who knighted him, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's I don't know. I feel like that's cool. So yeah, let's move on here. One way this could happen is if Bronn actually shows up and tries to kill Jaime, but Brienne steps in and takes the fatal blow for Jaime, and Bronn telling him that Cersei paid him to kill him.
Right.
I don't think this is likely, but it's a theory. Okay, so there's that. What do you guys think would make Jaime kill Cersei? So, Sir Matt, anything you think would make
if she kills Tyrion?
If she kills Tyrion, okay.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or okay. she's gonna go mad queen and try to blow up King's Landing.
Yeah, and it sort of parallels what he had to do before. So now he's a Kinslayer, you know, on top of a Kingslayer. Yeah. Okay, cool. Let's see. What do you guys? Let's see. Also, how much money does it take to hire the Gold Company? Could the gold Cersei gave Bronn be enough? Would it be funny to see someone buy the Golden Company away from Cersei and use it against her? And this kind of ties into the idea that maybe there's second sons or, you know, other, sellswords that have integrated into the Golden Company maybe and might, you know, attack right. from within or something. So that's kind of neat. I don't know. I mean, that's a lot to say that he would, you know, buy them off or whatever. And plus,
right.
the Golden Company is more likely to follow someone in a position of power mm-hmm. versus just Bronn. You know what I mean? They just, it's not all about money. But
in the show, yeah. Mm-hmm. In the books, mm-hmm. there is that possible tie to a Targaryen and wanting to all that stuff. But things I've seen people say, like Light, Longclaws, Blackfyre, all that. I mean, a lot of that stuff could end up coming true in the books, but there's just no time to explain Blackfyre Rebellion, any of that stuff in the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely not. So, okay, let's see. My next question for you guys is Jon manipulating Daenerys. Is Jon manipulating Daenerys or will eventually betray her? In that prophecy about Daenerys, it mentions that Daenerys gets betrayed 3 times. If my calculations are correct, she has one more betrayal coming and should be betrayed for love. Also, if I remember right, I read somewhere before the show started that one of the biggest betrayals is still coming. I don't think it's going to be Tyrion because Daenerys doesn't trust him as much as, you know, she did. So if Tyrion does betray her, I don't think it would be that big of a betrayal. But Jon, on the other hand, if he was the one to betray her, it would be devastating to her, even now that she knows his true heritage. Whew, that's all for now. Thanks for listening, to the Raven for reading, and let's hope Game of Thrones keeps giving us good episodes. So, wow, and actually, I don't know if that's Lady, that's Lady Jessica. Yeah, awesome. Okay, Sir Matt, we kind of end on this one here, but, you know, the idea is that Dany's betrayal. So we take it back to Dany. How do you see that playing out? How would he betray?
What if it's not Daenerys being betrayed by love? Like we think, like somebody that loves Daenerys, right? So like, let's say Jorah were the one to betray her. What if it's more of like a riddle? A lot of these prophecies are riddles. So let's say Daenerys is going to kill, I don't know, Sansa, and Jon kills Daenerys in order to save Sansa,
mm-hmm.
and it's like betrayal for love. He's doing it out of the love of his cousin.
You know, yeah,
his sister
/ cousin. Yeah,
right. His cousin. It's really his cousin, but yeah.
Yeah, family. As Arya says, don't forget that you're a part of this family too.
Right. You know? Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Well, and as you say, I don't know. How do you? Because I like what you're saying there about Jorah. You know, and him being, I think he's going to die for her because he loves her. You know.
Right, but that's not going to be a betrayal.
Right. So. Would there be a way, though, in which, how would he betray her? Is there any way that he could? I mean, he wouldn't. That's the one character that, you know,
right.
he wouldn't betray her, right? I mean, what's crazy about that is there's some irony in that, right? Is that, you know, he's the one who's loved her and who mm-hmm. meets her and kind of, he's just that's how he was with his first wife, right? I mean, just
unless,
didn't do anything.
Possibly that's how you get a Dario Naharis back. He loved her, and then Daenerys kind of kicked him to the curb.
Yeah.
And so maybe he's fighting for the Golden Company now.
It'd be a little poetic, even though he's an older guy, you know, I'm rooting for the old guy here. you know, if John, you know, she's in love with John, and if he did betray her, and that was the betrayal that took place, it's just ironic that
right.
Jorah's been there this whole time, and he truly does love her and has tried to kind of show that to her, and is just unconditionally loves her.
Maybe John, the only, I could see John betraying Daenerys because if she keeps pushing, you know, everything away, right? Where she's mm-hmm. so obsessed with the throne and he doesn't right. really care about that.
Right. Yeah. And he's learning more about her. Like, you know, when Sam kind of talks about what happened to his father and his brother, it's just like, that's a shocker. That's
right.
Maybe not how he right. would have handled it. And he starts to learn more about her decision making and conversation she has with Sansa. And he starts to say, you know what? You're not what's best. I don't know where you're coming from here, but like, you're not what's best for these for this kingdom, you know. And go back to his vows being in the Night's Watch, even though his watch has ended. It's like, that's what he's there for. He's protecting the realm, you know? And so,
yeah.
And it's just, so I keep going back to, would she lay her crown down? Would she say, no, you know, need to, she has no real ties to these people versus like, this is where John's been raised. This is, he knows these kingdoms and has, and is known by other people in the Seven Kingdoms. So yeah. Interesting, mm-hmm. Lady Jessica. You know, to think about that betrayal. I hadn't thought about that in a while. So that's good. I like it. Holy smokes, man. I mean,
woo!
And that doesn't even scratch the surface of the ravens.
No, we've had so many more ravens.
That doesn't scratch the surface. So we try our best. We're trying to include some folks who, so if you've been listening for a while and you haven't sent us a raven and you're worried that we're just going to keep reading from the same people, we've already talked to some of our bannermen. We're going to have them up in Raven's Nest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a Patreon. So if you're one of our bannermen or higher, our Sworn Swords sometimes even get involved in that, you know, so sign up for those two tiers and, or Captain the Guard or whatever. Sir Matt and I are both still looking for squires, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, you know, if we do find a squire along the way, you might find yourself on the episode here for some
Absolutely.
Of these recaps. So that's a little nugget there right at the end. So yeah, anyways, I'd love to hear from other people who have been listening for a while, you know, or have thoughts, or, you know, if there's a theory we haven't touched on in a bit, just send that in to btkcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. And we are going to be doing collaborations with some bigger, podcasts, YouTubers, stuff like that. So, you know, we know we're working on doing one with Order of the Green Hand right now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably be talking probably be a similar episode like this where
yeah.
we're all just chiming in on some of these theories and thoughts. So keep sending them in.
Yeah, exactly. So that'd be cool. And I also will be hitting up again, as I said, other podcasts this weekend at the Ice and Fire Con and hopefully making some alliances and just getting different perspectives. So that's what we love about Follow Up Friday. Though,
absolutely.
Like, it's not just Sir Matt and I, it's like, it's the realm, man. You know, they're sending in their thoughts and theories, and we love it. Some of them are crazy.
Yeah.
Some of them don't make any sense. Some of them
mm-hmm.
are point on.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them sound like it was Gurr who wrote in, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just great. It's great.
So. All right, guys. Well, as always, thank you guys so much for listening. This season is just every week. It's just the show is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and more of you guys are listening. And Sir Ezra and I just are overwhelmed in the best possible way. So,
yep.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing season 8, episode 3, Battle of Winterfell is maybe what the episode will be called. otherwise known as Everyone Dies, or get ready.
Bring your tissues.
Bring your tissues. So.
Okay. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write that review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that all of our favorite characters are dead.